Hi guys, and welcome to another Brown Car Guy and Buddies episode. And in this one, I'm going to be talking to Chandan Basu Malik, who's all the way over in India. However, like me, he is British Asian. He is London born. However, I met him in Dubai when I moved out there in 2006. He was an established journalist already, and he's worked on pretty much most of the titles in the region as editor or otherwise, including the Middle East editions of Autocar and F1 magazine, and of course Wheels magazine that is produced by Gulf News in Dubai. So he's got a lot of stories to tell, a lot of anecdotes, a lot of interesting stuff to get into. It's going to be real fascinating to catch up with him. He left Dubai even before I did, so it's actually been a long time since I've seen him. So yeah, this is going to be fantastic. Before we get into that, make sure that you're subscribing to youtube.com/brown car guy. Make sure that you're following me on all the social media channels. Just search for hashtag brown car guy. You can see it on my hat there. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and of course subscribe to browncarguy.com. Cool, let's get into this. Oh my God, Chandan, it has been ages. How long since we met? Because you actually left Dubai even before I did, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I think the last time we met was in Beirut. We were checking out the Infinity FX.
That's right. We went to the museum as well, didn't we?
Absolutely. And if I remember correctly, we found a couple of quirky things and in the car, and we decided, okay, we need to talk about this in our review. So I think that was the last time I met you. And as you know, 2018 January, I returned to India.
Right.
Two things for that, because A, the company which we were working, they decided to shut down publishing. And then, as you know, Raj was looking after the project. Then Raj went in for digital. So we were digital for about a year and a half. And then again, the owner of Automan, the I forgot his name.
It's okay. Listen. You're jumping ahead. You're jumping way ahead. Let's start early on. But before we do that, it's interesting that you brought up Beirut, because I was thinking about, because obviously there's been that disaster in Beirut that just happened recently. And you know, I was thinking back to that time, because it was a lovely city. You know, we had a great time there. And I was just trying to remember where that hotel that we stayed in, and that museum, that must have been in the area, right, where the damage happened.
It was close by. It was close by, because that was kind of near to the diplomatic area, if you remember.
Yeah, that's right.
Quite a market area.
Yeah.
And when we returned the cars, we could see the buildings which had pock marks, bombshell marks, and
yes,
things like
yes,
that.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
There's a bit of history there. So when you see the pictures right now, it's as if, you know, the city was bombed again.
My God, it's really sad. Love and wishes to all of our Lebanese colleagues, friends, and all the people that we know out there, wishing them all the very best. You know, hope that they're able to get through this.
The good thing is, some of our friends like Munir, Sada, they are fine. They are safe. So it's good. I mean, they're coping with it. There's nothing much they can do.
No, it's tough times for everybody. How has the lockdown been for you over there in India? Where are you exactly in India?
Kolkata. Mm-hmm. Kolkata. It's the former capital of erstwhile British Raj. And lockdown has been quite eventful in the sense, right now, again, it's kind of on and off. And the figures are not very encouraging. Yesterday, 66,000 people got infected.
In a day, yes.
We have surpassed the
US.
Yes, India has surpassed the US. They're trying to normalize things, but in reality, it's not happening the way it should be, because it's too difficult, it's too diverse, it's too big, it's very difficult to control.
Yeah.
And the other part is, although the government is educating people that the do's and don'ts, but it still feels that the message is not getting hammered. People are not taking it really that seriously. As a result of which, things are happening. I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. And the
how has this affected you? I mean, are you stuck at home? Are you able to get out and do any work, or what's happening?
Since 12th of March, I'm virtually stuck at home.
Wow.
Three months, I was totally at home. Only recently I've been able to go out, and that too, I don't walk on streets. I just take my bike or car wherever I need to go, so that I'm in least contact with people. I don't go to the markets. I don't do any social stuff. Very, very, very rare, unless it's known people. The family takes care of that. Basically working from home, because I had joined a new startup in January.
Right.
And we launched around mid-February, and then in almost second week of March, we went into lockdown. So basically life is like that. So it's more like
crazy times. It's been a crazy year, really, isn't it? But I know you from Dubai, where you've worked for a fair number of actually outlets over there. But actually, you're a fellow British Asian, aren't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. And I was born in London, in Hammersmith.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Would you care to mention when that was?
Hammersmith.
No, when?
Queen Charlotte's Hospital.
When?
56, 2nd of May,
1956. 1956. Oh my God. Cool, man. That you're part of the history, that's for sure. So you're London born like me. I'm also London born. That's amazing. And you schooled here as well. And you had your parents were doctors.
Yes. So schooling was mostly in Margate, south of England, Kent, and so that's the place where I spent most of my childhood and schooling before we came back to India in around mid 60s, and then a year I was in this city, and then we moved to UP in Varanasi.
That's quite weird, because you moved back to India probably in the mid 60s, which is probably when my dad moved to England in the mid 60s, you know. And you mentioned there's so many parallels there, because you mentioned UP, and my dad was originally from UP. So,
yes. If I'm not incorrect, Meerut, would it be Meerut?
You know what, you got me. I'd have to go back and check, you know. But yeah, somewhere it is in Uttar Pradesh. Yeah, that's where he's from. Yeah.
You told me in Beirut. We were talking about.
Could be. Yeah, it could be. I mean, that was probably. You might be right, because that was probably closer to when he passed away. It was a few years ago now. And I remember going through a lot of his documents and stuff. So I was looking at his old certificates and stuff. But my memory is really bad. But yeah, you're probably right. So that's interesting. Well, one of the things you mentioned about Margate is that's where you saw your first car, your first automobile.
Yes. I still remember it vividly. It used to be a single Gazelle, a blue and white.
Wait a minute. You told me that you're 3 years old when you saw this car, and you're telling me you remember it vividly. That's amazing.
I remember. I remember it because the gentleman who had it, Adam Mansell, he was the engineer, maintenance engineer of the hospital, and we were neighbors.
Oh, right.
In Margate, yes. So it was a four flat, two-story building, and we were neighbors with them. They didn't have children, so I was kind of their adopted son.
Right.
So I would spend more time with them than actually my parents, because
they have a car. Because they have a car.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. And he was a kind of a DIY type of guy, typical British, you know. And he used to tinker with the car. I remember him putting in these undercarriage lights, red lights, and I used to help him because that's what he told me later. I met him a couple many years later, and he said, uh-huh. you know, he used to call me John. My full name was John.
Right,
In England. So he used to say, John, do you remember you used to do this? He would open a clock or something, and he would lay out the parts, and he would give me the parts, and I would, you know, put them in place. And yeah. then when he would reassemble it, I would give it to him in the exact order. So I used to be his helper. He used to, any project he would do, he would actually call me, and I would help him out. So I was his helper. And that's how I got interested in
the... Yeah, I was going to say, so that must be where, because I often ask people, where did the passion come from for automotive? And it's clear that your adoptive dad, if you like, was clearly more influential to you than your actual yes. parents, who were doctors, and they must have wanted you to be doctor, right?
Yes, and there's a story behind this. I never wanted to be one, but they managed to get me into a medical college. I did it for 3 months, including you know, the first 3 months you do anatomy and study anatomy and all that, which I really hated. But luckily, I got thrown out from the medical college because I didn't have a domicile certificate, and all I right. thought that was a blessing. I thought that was a blessing in disguise, because then I shifted to management. I did my MBA, and then I moved in a totally different line. From science, I went into commerce.
Right.
So I think that was.
That so was my a parents couldn't blessing in disguise. Yeah. So hang yeah. on. So how did that? So because you said you went back to India in the mid '60s. Yeah. So how did that happen? I mean, most people when they come here, they tend to stay here for the long haul.
They did, but my dad had more. He was more attached to India and his parents, and so from the letters we could make out that, you know, because he being the youngest son in the family.
Right. Right,
and grandfather getting old, yeah. so they wanted to stay close by. So all those things made him come back to India. Then he wanted to.
So how old were you when you moved back to India then?
I was about 10, 11.
Okay, cool.
10 or 11.
So, and by this time, you must have been into cars properly, like 10, 11. I remember I was like fully into cars by that age, you know.
Okay.
So when you got to India, was that a little bit frustrating for you?
Not really, because in those days you had a lot of British cars or American cars, besides the odd Ambassador and yeah. the Premier Padminis and all that. So it was not too out of place initially, because we had an Austin 8.
Uh-huh.
We had an Austin 8 at that time. It was a 1947, one of those, you know, uh-huh. very roly-poly type cars, which had a very unique starting procedure. I'll tell you a little bit about that. And that car was...
It wasn't a crank handle. Was it a crank handle?
It had a crank handle. It had to be a crank, because the one of the last cars my dad had was a Ford Prefect.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And I still remember the registration number. DEG212.
Oh, 212. Okay. I was going to say, if it ended with 42... there'd be a beautiful yes. link there to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, wouldn't there? Ford Prefect, number 42.
Yes. Right. So later on, I also remember dad also bought a Ford Anglia.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. So he was quite a Ford guy in what, those days.
What color was the Anglia?
It was 1960.
What color was it?
The one before... the one with the very rounded body.
Oh,
not,
I
not
see.
The one, not the one with the cut flashback.
Right,
not,
right,
not
right.
that one. The one,
right, right.
The one before it.
Right, right.
The one before it. And and at one point in time, he also had an Impala, a two-door
oh, wow.
Impala.
Oh, that would have been
and,
cool.
Yes.
What year, would that have been a 60s one?
That would be, yeah, 59, 60.
In India. Where in India?
No, not in India. In London. In
he,
UK,
had an, he had an Impala in London.
He had an Impala. And when we used to see these pictures, so I asked him, what happened to this car? Well, what did you do with it? He said, I just had it for 2 weeks. It was a gas guzzler, and we couldn't afford it.
I'm surprised he found anywhere that he could fit it. I mean, that thing is huge. It's like driving a ship on the roads, isn't it?
Absolutely. Amazing. It was very big. I mean, you could actually play in it.
So in India, you were able to keep the passion going when you were back in India. Yeah.
And the best part was, my dad used to be, because he was a gynecologist, so he had to be called at odd hours to see patients in the hospital. So I would actually go with him, because the catch was, if I went with him, he would let me drive the car.
Oh, wow.
So I basically learned first I learned the steering and the gears by sitting next to him. He would do the clutch and the accelerator and all that. And that's how I got to learn the nuances of the steering, the guy, the road and everything. And then later on, my job was to start the car in the morning. It had a very specific ritual for it. Because what would happen is, because if you remember, in those days, cars used to be 6-volt, run on 6-volt battery systems. And they were not very efficient. So morning used to be a pain. You could never self-start the car. So what I would do is, I would go to the garage, open the bonnet. We had a jerry can with petrol. So 2 caps of petrol would go into the carburetor. Then we would crank it. Then we put the switch on, and then it would start. The rest of the day, you're fine.
Yeah, it's just that first start.
So amazing. My job was to do that, and then take the car out, take around the block, and then by the time he would finish his breakfast, it would be ready, then he would go to his hospital.
Man, we tend to forget nowadays when we jump into cars and start and drive off, that how it used to be a ritual before to start a car in the morning and warm it up. You know, even in 70s cars, you had to put the choke on and stuff like that. I mean, my goodness. You know. But that made driving an event, didn't it? It made driving an actual event.
Yes. And the other part was the brakes. Those cars had horrible brakes. Because
you were lucky.
The good thing was you didn't have to speed that much, because you were navigating through rickshaws and people walking and bicycles and thin narrow roads, so your speed would be more or less their speed, because otherwise you would move somebody off. So you would manage. You literally, I remember I used to stand on the pedal to get the car, you know, to go slow.
How old were you when you started driving then?
13.
Oh, wow. Cool. Very good. And in an old Austin 8. That's amazing. So then you continued the passion, and you wanted to, you know, carry on with this. At what point did you think that, you know, you wanted to do something that was related to cars as a career?
Soon after graduation, in fact, in those days, there were a couple of these startup magazines. In fact, Adil's Car and Bike was one of them.
Yeah, Adil Jal Darukhanawala, who's actually been one of my very first guests on this series, who's a great guy. He's one of the pioneers of journalism there, isn't he? Of automotive journalism.
Absolutely. He's like the pundit. We call him the pundit. You know, he's the guru of knowledge. So I had written. I didn't know him. I just, you know, cold call. I wrote to him. I said, look, I'm an enthusiast, and I would like to, you know, write for you. He never replied. Nobody replied. So that was it. And then a couple of years later, when I moved to Dubai from between India, I spent some time in UK as well.
Yes.
I started Indian takeaway with
you started a restaurant, didn't you?
Yes, in Chelsea. Lavender Hill.
Wow.
Lavender Hill. So we started a restaurant, a takeaway called Someplace Else. It was kind of a fusion thing. And it did very well. Because of the hospital across the road. All the night shifters would come, and you know, it was doing quite well. But I had to kind of abandon it because my mom felt sick, and I had to return to India, and I got stuck here.
My partner
couldn't run it, so eventually it was a dead loss.
Right.
So at that time, a friend of mine from Dubai was on a press junket to UK, so he came to meet me and he said, why don't you, I told him my story. I said, look, I spent so much, I invested so much, and this is what happened. I really don't know what this is. Look, you are a good writer. We know about you because you worked in advertising agencies and all that. Why don't you come to Dubai and try out? I mean, you're British, you won't need a visa, and you can stay with us. Said, okay. So in October 97, I was transiting. So I spent about 3 weeks in Dubai. And I got with landed up a job with Gulf Today in Sharjah, and there was I actually replaced Julian Millward Hopkins.
Yes, I remember Julian, him, the late Julian Millward Hopkins, who I knew as the PR for Mercedes when I went to Dubai. Right. Lovely guy, really nice guy, an old school gent.
Absolutely fantastic guy. So he was the features editor with Gulf Today, so PR manager. And from there, we built on a nice relationship and a lot of nice stories with Julian as well. I'll come to that.
So let me ask you. So you got a job with Gulf Today. Had you, yes. I mean, you said you had experience in advertising, but had you done any editorial before? Were you involved in journalism before that?
Not really. I used to write, but not exactly full-time journalism. So this was an opportunity for me to be there. Mm-hmm. So I got in there, and actually I spent some time with an Indian publication. And I often used to write about cars and things like that. In fact, I did the first Maruti Zen test drive, and people liked it. So
just repeat that again, because we had a slight interference in the video. Just say that. What car was it?
So I was one of the earlier guys who did the test drive for the Maruti Zen, probably one of the early ones from a non-motoring setup. And so that gave me a kind of the feel that okay, I could actually write about it and. But I was not getting an opportunity in India at that time. So the first opportunity I got to write about cars was with Gulf Today in the features section, where we introduced actually a two-pager. It was a tabloid beast of a tabloid timeout. Yeah. Not the other one. This was Gulf Today timeout. It was a tabloid, weekly tabloid. So we introduced motoring in there. And the first car I tested there was the Toyota Yaris.
Wow.
So hold on, I want to
clarify something here. So the first car that you reviewed, actually no, let's go back. Let's say the first bit of motoring journalism that you would have ever have done, when would that have been?
That would be the Maruti Zen. And
what year would that be? What year would that have been?
87.
Wow. 87. Okay. So you've just beaten me there. You've just beaten me there. Because I was just trying to think, as a British Asian, who's the first person to have written a car review? And I was 89. So you've beaten me there. So well done. So hats off to you. So that's amazing. So Gulf Today, honestly, in Dubai, was the first of a number of different outlets that you worked on. I mean, you pretty much everything there, you know, Wheels and Gears, Ad Market, Fleet Auto, Middle East Car, Auto Car, F1 magazine. I mean, that's amazing. Yes. And Wheels. I mean, this is amazing. And then, of course, we'll come to Automan as well. But that was a heck of a career that you crammed into a very short time there.
Okay. Yeah. So in most of the jobs, I was actually poached. So Wheels and Gear poached me from Gulf Today, and then Ad Market, which Faraj Yasin used to have, he poached me from Sohail's Wheels and Gears. And then again, when Media Factory were launching Autocar and F1 Middle East, they had approached Neville first, but he didn't take the job. He said he recommended me and I got the job. So I took Ford, and we did a couple of a lot of good stories out there. In fact, the first one, the launch issue was with Julian, actually.
Right,
so
right.
Julian got me the first year. We launched the magazine Autocar with the Mercedes on the cover. And then with Julian was very generous, and time to time he would make extra efforts and send me to different places to test out cars.
Yeah.
It could be a one-off or whatever. And so we did a lot of good stuff with Julian. And then the best part with Autocar was when we did the first car of the year,
yeah,
where we had Murray Walker with us.
Oh, wow. Wow. Legend.
At the legend, yes.
Yeah.
And I spent 3 whole days with him.
Uh-huh.
And he's such a lovely person to
yeah,
be with.
Yeah.
And in fact, we did a world exclusive because we are Indians, there's a little bit of interest in politics.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know what was the politics in a Formula One.
Yeah, yeah.
So he gave a full story about it, and we published it in F1 Middle East, and the UK guys, they were surprised that, okay, we've been doing this for years and nobody even talked about it.
Yeah.
How did you do it? And they were absolutely really over the moon with this particular story which we did.
So it sounds like that of all of the titles that you worked on, Autocar and F1 were probably what your favorite titles that you worked on in the UAE.
I mean, it was really an honor to work with such a title. I mean, the world's oldest to begin with, and it had a lot of consistency and all that. The reason why I left was it was too much of a pressure for a single guy to handle 2 magazines, and then the translations and the translators.
Yeah.
There used to be a pain in the backside.
I mean,
yeah, people saying that. And then, coincidentally, at that time, there was a guy called Mark Appleton. He was editor of Wheels. They had just started Wheels, and they were not doing too well. So I think the 6th or 7th issue, it was about to be closed. And then I met Mark at the Cayman launch. And that's where we got to know each other. And he said, "Can you come and meet me? I mean, can you help us out?" I said, "Yeah, I can help you out." And that's how I got the Wheels job. So I was with Wheels for about 216 issues.
Right, right, yeah.
And we being a weekly, it was quite fast-paced.
Oh man.
And we had a good team. We had a good team. Ahmed, Diane, Sonny. Imran, a lot of good guys were there, even Mark for that matter.
Mm.
I mean, he was a brilliant features writer. And Wheels also gave me a lot of opportunity to get even closer to the automotive world. And a couple of world exclusive.
Yeah, you did. I remember you did something that I was quite jealous of at the time, because I was obviously doing Car Magazine, and you got an exclusive with the Holden effigy, didn't you? I thought, wow, that was pretty cool. I was quite jealous of that.
In fact, they put me on the cover for that.
Yeah,
I
remember.
I was on the cover for that. And I'll try to dig out if I've got a copy of that and send it over to you. And that was great. And then
so that was one of your highlights, I would say. So what, like, I mean, if you said your top 3 experiences, you know, doing this motoring journalism in the UAE, what would they be for you?
One, I would say, was there were 2 people whom I met that those were great experiences. One was Horatio Pagani,
right,
and one was Bob Lutz.
Yeah, and legendary guy. Yeah.
So I'll start with Pagani. This was 2001, and we were doing a special issue. And I came to know that the Pagani Zonda is going to be on display. So I put the Pagani Zonda on cover. And at the show, we were sitting at the stand after the launches and the walk arounds and all that. I was at my stand and I see a guy, a silver haired guy, short guy, walking towards me with one of our magazines.
Right, right.
And he spoke in broken English. He says, what he meant to say was, who's the editor? I said, I'm the editor. He says, look at this. That's me. So I said, Haroshi Pagani? He said, yes. He said, you know me? I said, yes, sir. I know you very well. And then he brought in his translator because he speaks Italian.
Right.
So we did a brilliant interview with him. And I used to keep meeting him at various shows. And the moment he would see me, he would come to me, hug me, and show me his cars and talk about technology and what he's done with the Huayra, what he's done with the other cars, the Rs, and how things are moving. And in between one of those shows, I was, for a short period, I was jobless. And I was very depressed. But I was attending shows and all that. And he saw me. And he says, what's the matter? You know, why don't you look so happy? I said, look, this is what the problem is. So, and what should I do? So he gave me his suggestions and the thing, what he told me, I still remember. He says, remember, be the head of an ant, then the tail of a tiger. So that stuck in my mind ever since. So that was great meeting him. And the other one was with Bob Lutz. We had gone to attend the North American Motor Show, Detroit Motor Show, and the usual round tables, the dinner round tables which we had. Yeah. And he came to our table and we were talking about a lot of things. And I asked him, I said, Bob, can I have one of your special visiting cards? He says, which one? I said, the one which in which you are the pilot jet one. He says, you know whatever. I said, yes, I know a lot of things about you. And so we kept talking about the jet itself. I mean, people are just wondering, well, what's happening?
This is the MiG that he's got.
It's an Albatross. It's a Russian. All right. It's a Russian aircraft.
Right.
The Russian aircraft. He owns it. And then I came to know he's a great biker as well. He has two Harleys in Switzerland. So occasionally he used to go, and so we talked about biking. And then he drew me a picture. He said, how do you determine a guy whether he's a good rider or a bad bike rider? So I said, I don't know. So he drew me a picture. He said, if you touch your knees on the ground while taking a turn, you're a good one. You're a good rider. So a lot of anecdotes with Bob. He's also was a great
Those were the highlights. Yeah. I mean, like I said, you did a number of things, and you also worked for Overdrive and Saudi. But then you also worked in Oman with the late Raj Warrior, mutual friend of ours, who sadly passed away not too long ago. Yeah. And an incredible guy, and you really kind of hit it off with him, didn't you? I mean, he was again something of a stalwart of automotive media in the region, wasn't he?
Absolutely. In fact, me and Raj we became good friends, and we even before I joined Automan, we did a lot of gigs together, and we used to respect each other. And he actually wanted me to come to Oman much earlier. I literally made him wait for a year and a half before I said yes. Mm. And after the Saudi fiasco, I went to Oman, and that was my one of my longest jobs with him. And we revamped Automan. We made it. We actually took a lot of inspiration from your magazine.
Thank you.
In terms of presentation, because your magazine presentation was pretty good. Short, the photography, the layouts, the fonts, the way the story is represented, a lot of influences we took from yours. And we also made it a local magazine, but with an international flavor.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was doing with Car. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And we were doing quite well. I mean, there's no doubt about it. We were doing quite well. And then our owner, Hatim, he had a lot of aspirations to get into the Shura Council, which he eventually got into. Then he lost interest in publishing, and then the rest is history. So that was it.
Yeah, that's really sad. And of course, then Raj tried to do it himself for a while before, sadly, illness overcame him. So it's a real shame, because I would have loved to have done one of these with Raj, because I remember whenever I shared a car with him or went on a press event with him, it was always such a laugh. We always had such a great time, me and him. So yeah, I really miss him. Yeah.
And he was, both of us loved technology. We would discuss technology for ages in office, whether it's coffee, whether it's lunchtime, whatever. We would keep talking about cars and technologies and what did you think of this, what do you think of that. And then we would have to justify what we were, our observations were. And that's how we would present our stories, so that people could empathize exactly what the product was. So it was good. It was good. I still miss him. I mean, yeah. Just 18th was his birthday, so we had a little chat with his sister and all.
Right. So we are actually well over time, because I normally try to do these for 30 minutes. I always go over time, as I always say. But I can't let you go without asking you about this sort of thing that you've been doing during lockdown, which is you've been creating these little models and things. What's all that about?
Well, I always fancied model cars. As you can see behind me, you can see a few of them. And so I've been collecting cars from my childhood. I mean, the oldest one, I probably will send you a photograph, is more than 100 years old.
It
was my grandfather's. It's a tin plate. It's a tin plate.
Oh, my God.
Rolls Royce.
Yeah, you got to send me a picture of that.
I'll send you a picture of that. And and still, I have a lot of my old Dinky and Lesney cars, plus the collection which I had over the years. But the thing was, I always wanted to make a car. And during this lockdown, you know, you had a lot of spare time. So I would look into YouTube and look at these hobbyists, how they make these cars. And I said, okay, if they can make it, then let me try it out. And so first I started making them in cardboard, you know, old cartons and all that. Then I went into metal, and then I found some new materials. I kept experimenting with stuff. And I think I sent you pictures of three cars.
Yeah.
And they're all basically British cars. One's a Defender Series 1. The other one is a Morris Bullnose 1928, something like that. And the red one is the Wolseley Tourer 1912. And the Tourer is actually, there's one of them actually here in Calcutta, which was restored a couple of years back, and it belonged to the Viceroy of UK. So I took pictures of that car and made them an exact replica of it, scale 118.
So how are you doing this? You're just like getting, where are you getting bits and parts and stuff? Are you just basically making them everything yourself?
The raw material, the sheets, I'm using different materials, experimenting with different materials. So it's literally carving them out.
Right.
So I draw them out first, get the proportions right, draw them out, then use my cutters and tools to make the shape, then glue them. In fact, we use a lot of automotive technology, bonding technology, because I'm gluing metal and non-metal parts.
Right.
And then I made the wheels. I looked into the into YouTube and saw how they make these wire wheels. So I made those jigs. I made a lot of jigs and other things so that I could make the wheels different sizes, different spokes, whatever. And then that's how I progressed. So what you see is about 6 months' work. And now I'm actually able to make them faster. In fact, right now I'm building an Audi Union and one of the Alfa Romeos.
Wow.
So hopefully in a couple of weeks.
We're looking forward to see how that goes. Where can people see that? Are you posting these anywhere?
I will be posting them.
Okay.
And besides that, the other thing which interested me is in engineering of automobiles and bikes was when I started restoring them. So I have a collection of about 11 bikes now, various vintage bikes, the oldest being 1938, which I'm restoring right now. It's a Levis A1, they call it. It's a very rare bike, only 2000 were made in UK pre-war, and a couple of BSAs, Norton's, Triumph, I have all those. And I've restored them over the years. Some have taken about good 25 years to restore. But now it's faster because now we are able to get parts and help from various forums and groups. But that has helped me to understand the fine points of mechanics. And there's a nice story I'd like to share, if you allow me. Couple of years back, when the McLaren SLR was launched, we were invited to test drive the car in South Africa. So after the test drives, we went to the Kyalami track where there was the technical presentation, and you had all these cutouts, you know, the tub, the cones, the crash cones, and there was a cutout of the seven-speed DCT. Now, when we were talking to the engineer about this DCT, so he was explaining the different parts, and I looked into it. I said, look, he said, this is the state-of-the-art technology as far as gearbox goes, because you have, when you engage first gear, the third gear gets prepares itself, and by the time you've engaged the second gear, the third is ready to come in. So it helps in the reducing the time lag. I said, look, you may say this is state-of-the-art technology, but it isn't. He says, why? He was a German guy. I said, I have seen this semi-automatic clutch mechanical in motorcycles. So he asked me, which motorcycle? I said, Czechoslovakian motorcycle, 1950s, Java. He says, are you sure? I said, I'm 100% sure. He just went silent for a few minutes. He says, are you an engineer? I said, no, I'm a journalist. He says, you're the first person who has admitted, who has pointed this out, and I'm happy to say you are right. This is not an adaptation of technology, semi-automatic clutch technology of 50s. So I said, wow.
Amazing.
I'm impressed. Awesome.
So listen, on that note, I've got to let you go because we've gone well over the clock, and you know, I think that's a fantastic story to end on. Thanks so much for doing this. It's been fantastic to catch up with you, and hopefully catch up with you again soon. I'll put links below in the description so people can see what you're up to and stuff like that. But all the best to you over there, and speak again soon.
Absolutely. Take care. Bye-bye.
Whoa, an incredible trip down memory lane and remembering and reminiscing over a couple of dearly departed friends as well. May they rest in peace, gone but certainly not forgotten, as we've brought them back to life for a little moment or two in this video series. But also some great stories and anecdotes and things that the guy has done in Dubai and stuff that we did together as well. So a real opportunity to get into the media scene there. And also this fascinating thing that he's doing now with creating these model cars. I think that's really, really interesting. He's got some other plans as well, so don't forget to follow him. And let me know what you thought of the conversation in the comments above, below, elsewhere, wherever you're watching this. And if you're watching this on YouTube, then make sure that you're subscribing to youtube.com/browncarguy. Make sure that you're following me on all social media channels. Just search for #browncarguy. That's on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And of course, subscribe to browncarguy.com. If you enjoy these videos and you're enjoying my content, then maybe you can support me, and you can do that on patreon.com/ShazadSheikh. And there you will also find some exclusive content and also maybe some goodies such as this hat. Anyway, that would be great. Even if you can't, please continue to like, share, subscribe, comment, and all the rest of it. That's really valued and very much appreciated. Thanks so much for watching, and I'll catch you again soon in the next one.